Welcome, Truth Seekers, on behalf of the Great Awakening Report. This is a very special report on the Rainbow Bridge and Soul Star Consciousness Activation. Please go through this special report and stay in the heart space for it. Try to go through it sequentially if possible.
Yeah, that sequential part is it's absolutely critical. What we are exploring today builds on itself, like layer by layer. We aren't just skipping to the final chapter of some complex manual here.
Right, exactly. And, you know, our mission today is to really unpack this intensely detailed esoteric framework. And I want to set expectations right away for you listening, because this isn't just about like feeling peaceful for 10 minutes a day while listening to rain sounds or whatever.
Definitely not.
Yeah, this is a framework designed to structurally, and I mean literally, purify your personality, clear out lifetimes of karmic clutter, and build a direct functional bridge, what the sources call the Antakarana, a bridge to your higher self. We are going to map out the exact blueprint for this construction.
And, you know, just to set the baseline right at the top, the source material we are diving into today is largely based on the work of Josephine and Norman Stevens.
Right.
And they drew heavily on the teachings of the Tibetan master Jaywal Khul, which were transcribed by L.S.A. Bailey back between 1919 and 1949. And what Jaywal Khul makes very clear is that this isn't passive mysticism. He called this the new and true science of the mind. I mean, it is an active, structural, almost mechanical process of energetic engineering.
Okay, let's unpack this, because usually when we talk about engineering or, I don't know, even a medical diagnosis, there's this expectation of extreme precision, right?
Yeah.
You break your arm, the x-ray shows that jagged white line, and the doctor just points at it and says, there it is.
Right, it's binary. It's completely objective.
Broken or not broken. But then you step into the world of neurodevelopment, trauma, and the human energy field, and suddenly that x-ray machine is just completely useless. The landscape is murky. Most people think of their energy as just a, you know, a vague mood. But before we can even talk about building a brilliant, shining bridge to higher consciousness, we have to look at the traffic jam currently blocking the construction site.
The clutter.
Exactly. Which means we need to look at the actual ground level state of our daily energetic field.
The clutter of consciousness. I mean, it is an incredibly crowded, incredibly noisy space.
To put it mildly, the sources explain that the human personality operates through three lower vehicles.
Right, the lower triad.
Yeah. You have the physical etheric body, which is your dense physical form and its vital energy template. Then you have the emotional body, which is also called the astral body. And finally, the lower mental body, which handles your everyday concrete thoughts. And through long, slow evolutionary development, these three vehicles just accumulate distorted patterns. Jaywal Khul paints a pretty intense picture here. He notes that people constantly scatter their energy, and because of this, they walk around surrounded by a dense cloud of half-formed, disintegrating thought forms.
It's quite a vivid image, isn't it? Like, yeah. Just a dense cloud of disintegrating thought forms.
Yeah.
But we really have to break down why this matters, and mechanically how it happens in the first place.
Oh, yeah. How do we get so cluttered?
Well, the first thing to understand is that this isn't a moral failure. You didn't do something wrong to get this cloud. It's just a natural byproduct of instinctual evolution. Human beings are, you know, we're designed to react to our environment for survival.
Sure.
But all of that constant reaction, the excessive emotional identification with every single passing feeling, and the incomplete control we have over our racing minds, it creates an energetic residue.
Oh, like exhaust from a car engine. The engine is running, you're driving down the road, but you're leaving this thick cloud of smoke behind you.
Precisely. Except in this case, the smoke doesn't blow away. It just stays trapped right there in your immediate energetic field. And this clutter has severe tangible consequences for how you actually experience your life.
How so?
Well, first, it profoundly distorts your perception. These disintegrating thought forms literally stand between you and the external world. You are looking at reality through them.
What's fascinating here is how these low-grade formations essentially act as a permanent distorting filter.
Yes.
Like, you might think you are seeing a situation clearly, say a coworker sends you a short email, but you're actually looking at that email through a dirty lens made of your own unresolved emotional history. Your thought forms warp the neutral text into a perceived attack.
Exactly. You project the clutter onto the reality. And the second consequence is that this clutter makes you highly susceptible to collective suggestions and the emotional environments around you.
Give me an example of that.
So if your aura is full of porous, chaotic emotional debris and you walk into a room full of highly anxious people, that ambient anxiety just hooks right into your field. You absorb it because you literally have corresponding structures ready to receive it.
Man, that explains a lot about social media too.
Absolutely. And third, it misdirects your behavior by intensifying your emotional reactivity. You aren't responding to the present moment at all. You're reacting mechanically through this dense fog of past energetic debris.
I'm really trying to visualize this aura as the sources describe it, because they are very clear that these thought forms aren't just, you know, abstract ideas in our psychology.
Right, they have substance.
Yeah, they are semi-organized substance. Mm-hmm. Some of it is fluid and shifting. Some of it is highly condensed and hardened. And a lot of it interlocks into these restrictive grid-like formations around a person. It kind of makes me think of a smartphone.
Oh, I love this analogy. Let's explore it.
Okay, so think about when your phone is running incredibly hot, the battery is draining from 100% to zero in an hour, and the screen is just glitching out.
Yeah, the worst.
Right. It's not because the hardware is necessarily broken. It's because you have hundreds of background apps running simultaneously. You opened them weeks ago, you completely forgot about them, but they are still constantly refreshing, pinging servers, and just sucking up the processing power. These thought forms are like background apps that you never swiped up to close.
That is brilliant. The apps are open, they are half functioning, and they are draining the entire system's vitality. And if that energetic field is left unpurified, it creates a massive hazard.
A hazard? In what way? Like, what's the danger?
Well, think about what happens if you try to plug that overheating phone into a high-voltage rapid charger. If you attempt higher yogic or magical techniques, if you try to pull massive amounts of spiritual energy down into an unpurified system, you might actually stimulate these negative patterns faster than they can be cleared.
Wait, really?
Yes. The high-frequency energy hits the low-frequency clutter, and you end up energizing your own distortions. Your anxieties get louder. Your ego gets more rigid.
Oh, wow. So you're basically feeding the monster. You think you're getting enlightened, but you're just supercharging your own neuroses.
Exactly.
Wait, hold on a second. I have to push back on this a little bit. How are we supposed to function in the modern world without accumulating this emotional and mental debris?
It's tough.
I mean, you go to the grocery store, you read the news, you interact with stressed out family members. Is it even possible to exist horizontally in society, just moving through daily life, without catching these thought viruses and adding to the clutter?
It's a very fair question.
Hmm.
And the answer the esoteric sources provide is, well, no.
No.
No. If you are only living horizontally, meaning your consciousness is entirely focused on reacting to your environment, reacting to other people's emotions, and just bouncing around on the physical and emotional planes, you will absolutely guarantee the accumulation of this clutter. It is unavoidable.
So we're just doomed to be glitchy smartphones.
Not at all.
Mm.
Because the solution isn't to run away and hide in a cave to avoid the world.
Mm.
The solution requires the establishment of a vertical axis.
A vertical axis, meaning a connection that goes up out of the horizontal traffic jam.
Right. And to understand exactly how to build that vertical axis and why it works mechanically, we really have to look at the specific individuals who mapped out this blueprint in the first place. The architects of the Rainbow Bridge techniques.
Josephine and Norman Stevens.
Yes, Josephine and Norman Stevens.
The Stevens are such fascinating figures because they weren't just casual students of esoteric philosophy reading books on the weekend, right? The text describes them as conscious working disciples in the externalizing ashram of D. Wall Cool. And I want to pause right there because externalizing ashram is a pretty heavy piece of terminology. Can we translate that for the listener? Like, what does that actually mean?
Of course. So in this esoteric tradition, an ashram isn't necessarily a physical building in the mountains where you go to meditate. It refers to a working group of consciousness guided by an advanced teacher, in this case, the Tibetan master Jewal Kul. For centuries, these teachings were kept entirely hidden, passed only to initiates behind closed doors. So an externalizing ashram means this group was specifically tasked with bringing these hidden esoteric sciences out into the open public world.
They were modernizing the ancient blueprints.
Exactly. They were taking the occult mechanics and translating them for practical use.
And Norman was actually a director of the Lucis Trust for 7 years, which is the organization that publishes Alice A. Bailey's work.
Yes, he was deeply involved.
And Josephine didn't just study the material. She was Alice A. Bailey's personal secretary for a time. So they were deeply, deeply embedded in the transcription of these teachings. But the real game changer here, the thing that elevates this from just being philosophy to actual science, is Josephine's vision.
Yes. Josephine Stevens possessed remarkable clairvoyant and telepathic abilities. And we aren't talking about vague psychic impressions where she just gets a feeling about someone's vibe.
Right, not just intuition.
No, we are talking about the ability to literally see the human energy field on multiple sublevels. The sources state she could see from the dense etheric body all the way up through the emotional, the mental, and even the monadic level.
Wait, I need an ELI 5 on the monadic level? We've got the physical, emotional, and mental bodies. What on earth is a monad?
Okay, think of it as the ultimate spark of spirit.
Okay.
If the personality is the spacesuit you wear on Earth, and the soul is the astronaut wearing the suit, the monad is mission control back at home base.
Oh, I like that.
It is the pure, divine spark of life from which everything else emanates. It's an incredibly high frequency of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And the sources state that one of the brothers of the hierarchy actually told Josephine that she was one of only about 25 people on the entire planet with her specific level of extended, multidimensional vision.
Wait, really? One of 25 people out of the whole global population?
That's what the text claims.
That is wild. And because she had that literal visual access, the Stevens could do something totally unprecedented. They could empirically verify the techniques. Like, they spent over a decade teaching these practices to students and literally watching their energy fields change in real time. They documented it.
Yes, and that empirical verification is the absolute cornerstone of this entire system. They weren't guessing if a meditation worked. They weren't just hoping people felt better.
Right.
If a specific technique didn't clear the specific auric clutter they were targeting, Josephine could see the gray clouds just sitting there, failing to move. If it worked, she could see the central channel actually widening and glowing brighter. They kept meticulous charts and records of these structural changes, some of which are actually published in their book, Rainbow Bridge 2.
It's like they were spiritual structural engineers. They took the abstract physics of J.J. Wolkul's massive 30-year volumes of teachings and wrote an actionable step-by-step building code. They modernized it for what they called the dawning new age. But looking at this from the outside, if this science is so precise and it was empirically verified by people charting the visual data, why is this still framed as esoteric? Like, why isn't this just considered standard psychological hygiene by now?
That is the crux of the issue. And it really comes down to what we consider real.
Okay.
Standard psychology, as we currently practice it, deals primarily with the contents of the mind. It deals with your narratives, your memories, your behaviors, and cognitive reframing. It treats the mind as an abstract, invisible space.
Right. It's all software.
Yes. But this esoteric science deals with the literal living substance of the aura. It treats the subtle bodies as objective material reality, just a finer grade of matter than physical atoms.
So psychology is trying to rewrite the software while this science is literally re-soldering the hardware.
Exactly. And to treat the hardware of the human energy field, you need an understanding of the exact architecture of the soul. You have to understand what that subtle substance is actually made of. Which brings us to a major paradigm shift in how we view our own thoughts.
Okay, let's get into that.
Because the aura isn't just empty space or a colorful static halo. The sources describe it as a field of living substance made of what esoteric traditions call devas and elementals.
Okay, this is where things get really deep. Are you saying my aura is essentially alive?
Yes. The mental, emotional, and etheric planes are structured environments populated by elemental lives. These devas and elementals make up the actual substance of your lower vehicles.
Wow.
But here is the key. They are blind builders. They respond automatically and mechanically to vibration. They respond to your thoughts and your intentions, and they arrange themselves into the thought forms we've been talking about.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it explains so much about human behavior. The foundational rule the sources give is energy follows thought, and the eye directs that energy.
Exactly.
Because these elemental lives respond blindly, whenever you have a repeated reactive emotion, say, you know, chronic anxiety about your finances or a recurring argument you keep having in your head with your spouse, you are literally commanding these tiny elemental lives to build structural walls inside your aura.
You are giving them a blueprint through your repetition, and they eagerly build exactly what you focus on.
Yes. You are trapping yourself in a house built by blind contractors following your worst, most reactive blueprints.
That's a great way to put it.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. If we imagine this elemental substance, like, say, iron filings scattered on a table.
Okay.
And our thoughts are a magnet. We move the magnet, the filings blindly snap into a rigid shape.
Right.
But if that's true, and my thoughts are the magnet, why couldn't the personality just think really positive thoughts to clear the aura? Like, can't I just say I am happy 1,000 times and command the iron filings to turn into a smiley face? Why do we need the soul to do the heavy lifting?
It's a very logical question. And honestly, the whole positive thinking movement is entirely based on that exact premise.
Yeah, totally.
But mechanically, it fails when dealing with deep structural clutter, and it comes down to frequency and authority.
Frequency and authority.
Yes. The energy of the personality, even a well-meaning, positively thinking personality, is simply too low frequency to transmute the deeply embedded, hardened clutter it has created over multiple lifetimes.
Ah. So a low-frequency magnet can't unstick filings that have been glued together with superglue.
Exactly. The elementals that make up that dense clutter won't dissolve just because you politely ask them to with your everyday horizontal mind. They require the organizing power of a higher intelligence. They require higher devic intelligence, which operates under broader evolutionary laws and is guided exclusively by the soul.
So the personality cannot fix the personality.
It cannot. The personality created the mess by living horizontally. The only way to reorganize that substance properly is through vertical development. You must call down the high-frequency energy of the soul to override and dissolve the elemental clutter. Let's look at the human architecture the sources provide.
Let's do it.
Below is the personality, operating through the physical, emotional, and mental bodies.
The messy part.
Right, the messy part. Above the personality stands the soul, which esotericists often call the egoic lotus.
I've always loved that term, but why is it called a lotus? Like, what does that mean structurally?
Well, the soul isn't just a blob of light. It has structure. Clairvoyantly, it appears as a magnificent unfolding flower of living fire, hence the egoic lotus.
Oh, wow.
It has pairs of petals that unfold as the human being evolves, representing the acquisition of knowledge, love, and spiritual sacrifice. It's the true directing intelligence of your existence. And beyond the egoic lotus is the higher triad.
Another translation needed, please. What is the higher triad?
The higher triad is the threefold expression of the spirit, Atma, Buddhi, and Manas. Or in simpler terms, spiritual will, intuitive love, and higher abstract mind.
Okay, got it.
So you have this massive vertical column of architecture.
Yeah.
From the physical body up to the soul, the lotus, up to the higher triad, and finally the monad. But the critical interface points for you, the practitioner in a physical body, are two specific energetic centers.
And these are the stars, right?
Yes. The soul star, located about 6 inches above the physical head, and the earth star, located about 6 inches below the feet.
And interacting with those two stars is the absolute foundational rule for phase I of the Rainbow Bridge process. The bridge must be built, and it must be built in a very specific sequence. You don't just jump to the higher triad.
Sequence is everything here.
Yeah.
You cannot skip steps, or you risk psychological damage. Phase I is all about the sequential building of the Antahkarana, the central channel that connects the personality to the soul. And it begins with an absolute prerequisite.
A mantra.
The non-negotiable first step before you do any spiritual practice, any meditation, or any energy work whatsoever.
The soul mantra.
The soul mantra.
For you listening, here are the exact words of the mantra. It has 5 parts. I am the soul. I am the light divine. I am love. I am will. I am fixed design. Now, why these specific words?
We have to stress this point heavily. This is not a symbolic meditation. You are not saying this just to put yourself in a relaxed, pious mood. These words are functional, energetic triggers. Each line aligns a different aspect of your vehicles to the soul's authority.
I compare the soul mantra to a cryptographic key in cybersecurity.
Ooh, I like where this is going.
Yeah, like if you sit down at a highly secure server, you can type whatever you want on the keyboard. But unless you enter the exact right cryptographic key, you do not get admin access. You are just a guest user with limited permissions.
Spot on.
The soul mantra grants your waking awareness admin access to the soul. It tells the elemental system, I am no longer operating as the fragmented personality. I am asserting the central intelligence.
That is a perfect technical analogy. And without that invocation, the techniques of the Rainbow Bridge are completely ineffective. Or even worse, if you try to do energy work without invoking the soul first, you are just violently stirring up the horizontal clutter.
Just shaking the dust around.
Exactly. You are agitating the very thought forms you want to clear. The personality's job is simply to cooperate and direct the attention. The soul provides the actual voltage.
Right.
Once the soul mantra is spoken, the soul star that centers 6 inches above the head becomes responsive. It becomes magnetically active.
And this is where the triangulation method comes in, which is the core practice of phase one. Once the soul star is active, it's described in the text as a glowing ball of solar fire.
Yes.
And the practitioner literally uses their attention to move this ball of solar fire down through the body, all the way to the earth star below the feet, and then back up. It is an active burning process. It burns through the emotional and mental debris to carve out the central channels.
It is carving a conduit. Imagine a laser cutting through dense, calcified rock. It takes about 6 to 8 weeks of consistent daily practice just to widen this newly built central channel to about 1 inch in diameter so that it can safely handle higher frequencies of energy.
Okay, let's talk about the mechanics of that burn, because moving a ball of solar fire through the center of your body sounds incredibly intense. I mean, if this is real elemental substance being burned away, is there a danger of this burning process overloading the physical body or the nervous system?
It's a huge consideration.
Like, what happens if someone is super enthusiastic, skips the 6-week timeline, and tries to do this for 4 hours a day to speed up their enlightenment?
That is a very real danger, and the sources explicitly address channel safety. Because the solar fire is actively destroying energetic blockages, it produces debris. Think of it like a controlled demolition inside a building.
Okay.
You are knocking down old drywall and concrete to widen a hallway. That demolition creates a massive amount of dust and rubble. If you rush the demolition or if you don't clean up the rubble as you go, the entire building fills with toxic dust. You can't breathe.
That makes total sense.
In an energetic sense, the practitioner experiences severe nervous system friction, emotional instability, headaches, and profound energetic exhaustion.
Which leads us directly to the mandatory safety mechanism that must be deployed immediately after moving the soul star. If you carve the channel, you have to use the spiritual whirlwind.
Yes, the spiritual whirlwind, sometimes called the etheric vortex. This is not optional. It is a mandatory cleanup protocol.
Right.
Whenever the soul star is moved through the body, this tool must be used to sweep the aura. Mechanically, it's visualized as a spinning funnel of energy that drops down over the entire aura, sweeping all that dislodged rubble down into the earth to be neutralized.
It makes total sense. If you are sandblasting a rusty pipe to widen it, you are dislodging decades of hardened toxic rust.
Mm-hmm.
If you just leave the dislodged rust sitting there inside the pipe, it's going to clump together and clog the pipe entirely, probably worse than before you started.
Exactly.
You absolutely have to flush the pipe with water afterward.
This raises an important question about spiritual responsibility, actually. So many modern spiritual practices focus entirely on raising energy.
Oh, yeah. Everyone wants to raise their vibration.
Right. They want the bliss. They want the Kundalini awakening. They want to channel high frequencies. But they completely fail to address the resulting toxic shedding that occurs when high-frequency energy hits a low-frequency cluttered system.
They just leave the dust there.
They leave their practitioners essentially choking on their own energetic exhaust. The Rainbow Bridge system demands daily functional hygiene. It forces you to take responsibility for your energetic waste.
So if someone forgets this step, if they do the triangulation, move the soul star, burn up some debris, but skip the spiritual whirlwind because they're in a hurry to get to work, what exactly is that energetic congestion going to feel like? Are they going to wake up with brain fog?
It can manifest in several deeply uncomfortable ways. It often feels like a sudden, inexplicable heaviness or a severe brain fog, like you're trying to think through molasses.
Ugh. I know that feeling.
You might feel highly irritable or overly sensitive to other people's energy because your field is full of static. In some cases, because you've loosened old emotional residue without sweeping it out, you might find yourself suddenly looping on a painful memory from 10 years ago for no logical reason.
Wait, seriously?
Yes. You're sitting at your desk and suddenly you're furious about something your ex said in 2014. Your field is literally congested with the ghosts of your own past.
Wow. You're swimming in the dislodged rust. So to prevent that, the Stevens incorporated all of this into what they call the complete daily spoken flow. It's designed to be a quick, sustainable daily rhythm. You invoke the soul mantra, you move the soul star to widen the channel, and you immediately sweep the field with the whirlwind.
And the text says it takes minutes. It's not an exhausting hours-long marathon. It moves the practice from something you occasionally do on a weekend retreat to a natural daily state of structural alignment.
Right. It's just hygiene.
And consistency is the absolute key. You do this daily for those 6 to 8 weeks until Josephine's charts show that the central channel is a clear, stable, 1-inch diameter conduit. Because once that structure is stable,
the real deep cleaning begins, because now your phone isn't just plugged into the wall. It has a massive, stable fiber optic cable feeding it pristine data. Welcome to phase two.
Phase two is where the profound psychological and karmic clearing happens. Because now that the central channel can handle the voltage of the soul without burning out the nervous system, we can start systematically dismantling the deeply rooted thought forms that dictate your reality.
The sources outline two primary tools for this purification and karma clearing: the Stevens method and alternate soul star radiation clearing. Let's start with the Stevens method because the mechanics of this are fascinatingly specific. It uses a series of 36 specific verbs placed in structured sentences, repeated over a period of 2 to 5 years, to break up external and internal patterns.
To understand why verbs are used and why it takes years, we have to look closely at how thought forms are constructed. The sources differentiate between two main types of clutter: word forms and line forms.
Okay, what's a word form?
A word form is a specific spoken statement or core belief that has been repeated so many times it has crystallized into an energetic structure. It's a localized knot of dense energy in the aura.
Like a piece of malicious code programmed into your operating system. A core belief like, I am not enough, or people always leave me, or money is evil.
Exactly. That is a word form, and yeah. Line form is the chain of associated thoughts attached to it. It's the predictable emotional loop that gets triggered.
So the word form is the anchor, and the line form is the reaction.
Yes. You think the word form, I am not enough, and it instantly triggers a line form, a rapid cascade of defensive thoughts, anxieties, self-judgments, and physical tension in the gut. The Stevens method uses specific commanding verbs to intentionally disrupt the energetic continuity of these structures.
So mechanically, how does a verb do that? What kind of sentence are we talking about here?
You are invoking the soul and using verbs like dissolve, shatter, clear, transmute, and release. A mock sentence might look like, I command my soul to shatter, dissolve, and transmute the external pattern of unworthiness.
Okay.
When spoken with the authority of the soul through this central channel, those verbs act like specific frequencies of sound hitting a glass. They resonate with the rigid thought form until it loses its structural integrity. It literally starves the thought form of the cohesive energy it needs to hold its shape.
But wait, the source makes a really important distinction there between internal patterns and external patterns. What is the difference, and why does it matter which one we are clearing?
It matters deeply for your sense of autonomy. Internal patterns are the reactions, habits, and emotional responses you have personally developed through your own choices and experiences in this life or past lives. If you built them, you own them. External patterns, however, are the thought forms you inherited or absorbed from your family, your culture, your religion, and your society. You didn't build them, but you allowed them into your aura, usually during childhood, and they act like a permanent invisible barrier around you, dictating how you see the world.
So they're verbal viruses that you caught from your environment.
Exactly.
But here is where I want to challenge this concept, or at least play devil's advocate for a moment. If these thought forms, these deeply held beliefs, these inherited cultural values, these emotional loops, if they essentially dictate our personality and our identity, does dissolving them make us lose our sense of self? I mean, if I dissolve everything my parents taught me and all my defense mechanisms, how do you know what is actually you and what is just an inherited external pattern waiting to be cleared? Will I just become a blank slate?
That is the ultimate terror of the ego, isn't it?
Right.
The personality thinks it is its trauma. It thinks it is its political beliefs or its family conditioning. It clings to the clutter because the clutter feels like identity.
It's familiar.
But the truth the esoteric sources point to is that you are not losing yourself. You are finally meeting your true self for the first time. The soul is the true directing intelligence. When you dissolve the external patterns and the karmic thought forms, you don't become a blank robot. You become a clear lens. You become wildly, uniquely yourself, free of the distortions.
You lose the scaffolding, but you reveal the actual building underneath.
Beautifully put. And the second method, the alternate soul star radiation method, achieves this structural clearing in a slightly different way than the spoken word forms.
How so?
Well, once the central channel is wide enough, you can simply hold the intensely high-frequency radiation of the soul star within the channel and let it radiate outward into your aura.
How does that work mechanically?
It works through the law of resonance. It's exactly like sunlight naturally dissolving shadows or a high-frequency sound wave shattering a kidney stone.
Oh, that's a visceral image.
You don't necessarily have to sit on a therapist's couch and intellectually psychoanalyze every single inherited belief to clear it. The sustained high-frequency energy of the soul simply breaks the structural cohesion of the low-frequency thought form. It melts it. The elemental lives making up that thought form are forced to disband and return to the general reservoir of energy.
And the benefits listed in the source material for this phase of purification are absolutely staggering. I mean, it explicitly lists permanent benefits, for example, slower aging. And mechanically, that makes sense because the prana, the vital life force, isn't being blocked by massive energy jams in the etheric body. The currents flow smoothly. It also mentions complete immunity to suggestions of low self-esteem.
Think about the mechanics of that immunity. If someone insults you, the energy of that insult simply passes right through your field because there is no matching dense thought form in your aura for the insult to hook onto. It finds no resonance.
That is true freedom. It removes the channels for infection. It ends uncontrolled emotional reactivity. And remarkably, the text says it clears heavy karmic mistakes. You are structurally dissolving the crystallized karma held in your etheric and mental bodies. You are wiping the slate clean energetically.
Which they have successfully integrated the higher triad we mentioned earlier, the spiritual will, intuitive wisdom, and abstract intelligence. They become a physical anchor for those energies on Earth.
The text mentions the symbolism of the five-pointed star here. The mind, the heart, the body, the earth, and the spirit, all functioning in perfect, unimpeded harmony. And when multiple people achieve this state of the Buddhic column, something incredibly powerful called group linking occurs.
This is a vital concept for the New Age they discuss. Group linking doesn't mean you all sit in a circle holding hands and consciously trying to merge your minds. It is a natural energetic phenomenon.
So it just happens automatically?
Yes. It means that when multiple practitioners maintain this purified vertical alignment, their fields naturally recognize each other. They create a resonant overlapping field. Their fields of consciousness interact and create a shared energetic environment that literally stabilizes the collective horizontal field around them.
Okay, let me try to ground this. I look at it like a radio. You start out as a broken radio, picking up everyone else's static. The DJ is yelling, the music is distorted. You do the rainbow bridge work, you invoke the soul, you clean the hardware, and you finally tune into the crystal clear station of your higher self.
Right.
But as this Buddhic column forms, you upgrade. You are no longer just a receiver. You turn into a broadcasting tower. You begin stabilizing the frequency of your entire neighborhood just by existing in that space.
Yes, exactly. You become a stabilizing node in the planetary grid. And internally, for the individual, it leads to what esotericists call continuity of consciousness.
What does that look like day to day?
For the average person, consciousness is highly fragmented. You are awake and horizontal, then you fall asleep and lose consciousness. Maybe you have chaotic dreams, and occasionally you have a rare moment of deep intuitive insight. With continuity of consciousness, that fragmentation ends.
You're just always aware.
You maintain a consistent, unbroken sense of presence, whether you are awake, asleep, or meditating.
Yeah.
You become a conscious anchor point for the planetary hierarchy. You are literally accelerating the externalization of the kingdom of heaven on Earth by providing a clean, grounded terminal for those higher energies to enter the planetary ecosystem.
It even mentions that actual initiatory powers, like telepathy, begin to naturally develop at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
And DJ Walkul states clearly that these powers are gained not by intense mystical study or trying really hard to read someone's mind, but strictly by the physical and etheric vehicle changes we've been talking about. The structural changes make the powers possible. It's just the natural physics of a clear channel.
It's purely structural.
So what does this all mean? Let me ask you, is this planetary service really as passive as just maintaining this column? Does this inner alignment compel outward physical action in the world? Or do you just sit in your house being a spiritual broadcasting tower while the world burns?
That is a critical point. True action arises naturally from a purified state. If you are aligned with the soul will direct you into right action. It's not passive isolation or spiritual bypassing. It is functioning fiercely and actively in the world without being caught in the world's horizontal clutter.
You're in it, but not of it.
Exactly. You can act, you can serve, you can build, but you are doing it from the vertical axis. When the bridge is truly built, as the chart in the text says, the light above and the life below are known as one. There is no separation.
Which brings this entire massive, deeply technical journey into focus. We have tracked the complete arc today. We started by recognizing the diffuse, exhausting clutter of our horizontal auras, the traffic jam of thought forms.
We did.
We learned how to invoke the soul mantram to grant admin access to the higher self. We discussed the literal structural building of the Antakarana through the triangulation method, burning through the debris with solar fire. And we emphasized the absolute necessity of sweeping out the toxic debris with the spiritual whirlwind so you don't choke on your own energetic exhaust.
And we explored how widening that channel allows you to enter phase two, using the Stevens method and soul star radiation to permanently dissolve lifetimes of karmic thought forms, eventually turning you into a clear, functioning Buddhic column, an anchor for planetary evolution.
And why does this matter to you? Why should you care about esoteric architecture? Because this is a practical, mechanical shortcut to bypassing prolonged suffering. You do not have to spend the next 30 years endlessly psychoanalyzing your trauma, trying to figure out why you react the way you do, or being a helpless victim to your emotional triggers.
It's about taking the power back.
You can structurally, energetically dissolve the forms that hold that suffering in place. You can regain your health, your focus, and your absolute spiritual autonomy.
It is the ultimate shift. You move from being an unconscious victim of elemental substance, endlessly reacting to a world of clutter, to being a conscious co-creator with the soul, actively building the bridge to a higher reality.
So as we close the special report, I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over. Right now, as you listen to this, there is a voice in your head evaluating everything we've just discussed. It's judging the information, analyzing it, maybe doubting it, or maybe feeling excited by it. But what if that voice, the busy horizontal mind that you so closely identify as you, isn't the architect of your life at all? What if that voice is just the raw building material waiting for your actual soul to finally pick up the tools?